Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, my friends, we're now into the second hour of this global transmission against tyranny in defense of liberty. Coming up later in the show, they're saying they're about to capture bin Laden, this time out of the mainstream news reports, out of the Sunday Telegraph, out of the Washington Times, and we believe this is going to be a stage capture. We've been saying this for over 2 years from my White House sources. Also, we'll get into anti-Semitism charges causing more damage than film could from a rabbi that wrote a great editorial, a Daniel Lappin. That's going to come up later. Also, more on the Rhode Island governor withdrawing their martial law legislation. He's now apologized and said that he hadn't read the bill. You see, oh yes, you'd read the bill. You counted on us not reading it. Now that we have, you've had to withdraw it. More on that coming up. Very serious issue. Also, Supreme Court upholds judges' right to compel medication. So now we have judges giving other judges police powers. You got to love it. Soviet-style police powers. CBS News, years of FBI agent crimes detailed. That's coming up later in the broadcast, and I'll also get into some of my comments on Hutton Gibson's supposed comments concerning some interesting issues. And I do have some comments on this, so that's coming up later as well. Before we go to our first guest, who I'm honored to have, well, our guest for this hour, I wanted to just remind you that Dr. David Kelly was the head of the Level 4 Porton Down Bioweapons Lab in Wiltshire, England. And he was then the head British weapons inspector who'd been pro-war. He then came back and leaked information that, look, I'm a hawk for this war, but I'm not going to lie, Saddam doesn't have the weapons of mass destruction. And Tony Blair misused my assessment. Well, suddenly he wound up dead. He told British and U.S. colleagues that I'm going to be murdered and found dead in the woods if I don't shut up. This is now mainstream news. Three top doctors have gone public who've looked at the autopsy results and say he clearly did not commit suicide. And we have that posted at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. So a lot of people are starting to go public on this. There were rumors of this last week that somebody who'd been inside the British government had sources that said that they could confirm that Dr. David Kelly had been killed. But the folks that got that story, I guess, didn't take time out to go ahead and get in contact with the individual who was bringing forward this information himself. We've done that. He's coming up here in just a few minutes, and we're so honored to have him with us here on the show. He's Michael Shrempton, and Michael Shrempton has a long bio. I did some research on him over the weekend. Michael Shrempton, of course, is a national security lawyer, that is barrister in government matters. He's written for the Journal of International Security Affairs. He has given advice and briefed the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. That's the U.S. Senate. He's given speeches and consulted all over Western Europe and the United States. And, he's been an invited guest of the State Department. So he's a mainstream guy, and I was very impressed talking to him. We're about to break for a quick 3-minute break. Come back and join a bunch of stations that carry news during this segment. And I'll briefly recap who our guest is, and we'll go to him. Michael Shrempton is on the line with us. And again, we're going to break and come back. And he has some bombshell information for you from his sources inside MI5 and MI6. Again, he's a national security lawyer, that is barrister, who has advised the United States Senate Intelligence Committee. So you want to have your tape recorders going, want to call your friends and family, and tell them to tune into this show. And one of our great writers, Simon, is going to have an article written for us by this evening that will be posted on the websites as well.
Yeah.
brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We're going to have an article this evening on the websites. It'll appear first on PrisonPlanet.com. And I want to thank Simon, and I want to thank Rowena, and I want to thank Paul Watson and all the folks that have been working on this story and for getting us this guest. And again, he's Michael Shrimpton, and national security lawyer or barrister, and he's written for major anti-terrorism journals. He has given his expert advice to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence for the U.S. Senate, and the bio goes on and on. He's also been involved in a lot of prominent high-profile cases in England. I came across that in my research on him, and he's a really nice fellow. During the break, I was talking to him. I said, you know, I hope you don't end up in the woods like Dr. David Kelly. And he said, well, no, by going public, you protect yourself. And that's the truth. For other government whistleblowers, telling the truth is what protects you. If you covertly leak something, that's what's dangerous. So he protects himself by going on air. And obviously, because of all of his sources, he's a great great source for all of us. Michael, good to have you on the show with us.
You do.
Just for folks around the world who aren't very, very familiar with Dr. David Kelly, hard to believe people aren't, can you recap who he was, what happened to him, and then from your sources, you even know down to the specifics of how they killed him, and from your sources, who was behind the killing. Can you just go through it for us?
Yes, David Kelly was probably the most respected microbiologist in the United Kingdom, certainly one who specialized in weapons of mass destruction. He was the head of our main WMD laboratory at Porton Down in Wiltshire. He was very involved in the dismantling, verification of the dismantling of the Soviet WMD programs after the end of the Cold War. He spent some time inside the bad old USSR. He was the senior British inspector on UNSCOM, the UN mission inside Iraq. He spent some considerable time in Baghdad. He was working very closely with our Overseas Intelligence Service, MI6, or the Secret Intelligence Service, and he was a major, high-value British intelligence asset. He was a good man. Decorated, awarded the CMG, commander of St. Michael and St. George, highly regarded, and well-liked, too, within the British intelligence community, and also respected in the United States.
And then suddenly Tony Blair smearing him in the press, and he ends up dead. And the witnesses, according to the London Times and their publications, saw four men in black uniforms standing around him. They run off, and oh, it's a suicide. Go over the whole controversy of Dr. David Kelly was a hawk for the war, but he wasn't going to put out false intelligence. Go through that for folks that missed out on it.
Well, yes, David Kelly briefed in a British BBC journalist called Andrew Gilligan, and also spoke to another journalist for the BBC Television's Newsnight program. And he briefed in both journalists along the lines that the case for the WMD case for war with Iraq had been exaggerated. There's a lot of dispute about exactly what was said and what wasn't said. The BBC Today program, which is the leading radio current affairs program, led with a story from Andrew Gilligan, which didn't name David Kelly as Andrew's source. Now, we know that David Kelly was, and my own intelligence sources confirmed that before the BBC itself confirmed it on Sunday, the 20th of July. David Kelly was outed in the media. Big dispute as to who authorized his name to be given to the media. And he was asked to appear before a committee in the House of Commons. There was a lot of controversy about what the government had been told, how truthful a dossier that they had prepared on Iraqi weapons of mass destruction was, and shortly after he gave evidence to the House of Commons, he was found dead on Friday, 18th of July of last year. He was found dead. There is a dispute about exactly where he was found. According to the official version of events, he was found dead in a copse or a wood at a place called Harrowdown Hill between the village where he lived in the River Thames. But the forensic tents, it's noticeable, Alex, that the forensic tents that were set up by the local police force, Thames Valley Police, were actually set up in the field. Why you would have someone killed in the woods and have the police tents over the scene of the crime set up in the field, no one has yet been able to explain to my satisfaction. Now, the government were blamed for causing the death, but the way the government were criticised was this, that they had caused his name to be leaked to the media, that had put him under intolerable pressure, and he had allegedly committed suicide. The initial media reports all went with suicide, and the mainstream media in the UK is still reporting it as a suicide. The government responded very quickly and brought in a law lord, Lord Hutton, who previously had been Lord Chief Justice of Northern Ireland, and the Hutton inquiry has very recently reported. Lord Hutton didn't challenge the suicide verdict. There was no cross-examination of witnesses before the Hutton inquiry as to the cause of death. It was assumed that it was suicide, and the BBC were essentially blamed for poor reporting. The government were let off the hook. The Hutton report, I'm sorry to say, is widely seen as a whitewash, and it's been rubbished. A very senior British intelligence officer, recently retired, a lieutenant colonel, Crispin Black, who was on the Defence Intelligence staff until 2002, has basically described the report as a laughing stock, and I respectfully agree.
Yeah, I've seen major polls where over two-thirds of British people believe it's complete fraud. I mean, obviously, Tony Blair hires one of his cronies to come in and say, oh, you didn't do anything wrong, and then even that's a whitewash of a larger whitewash, because obviously, according to the medical reports, the coroner's report, the doctors that have looked at it, the suicide verdict, that's a fraud itself. And let's go into your sources and what really happened to Dr. David Kelly.
Absolutely. Well, I wouldn't be allowed to say that Tony Blair had hired a judge. You understand that in England we don't hire judges. the judge is on the state payroll anyway, and I wouldn't want to be thought of as suggesting that anybody had put a little extra funds Lord Hutton's way. I'm quite sure Lord Hutton took no extra payment.
Well, what I'm saying is that obviously Hutton's been involved in what's been called whitewashes in the past.
This is the report, I'm sorry to say, with every respect to Lord Hutton, the report is a complete whitewash.
Well, I mean, you have a government institution whitewashing for another government institution.
Well, exactly. And this is the problem with appointing senior judges to hold inquiries. And there's been a lot of adverse comment in England. The senior judge is, by definition, part of the establishment. It's very difficult. It's very difficult for the judge, of course, because if he whitewashes the government, everybody says, well, it is a whitewash. If he blames the government, it's asking too much of a senior judge to go around blaming the government. It's not what senior judges do.
I mean, what do you expect? I mean, here we have it where Janet Reno hires somebody to investigate Waco. I mean, she literally appoints the investigator. We have Bush controlling the 9/11 panel. I mean, it's ridiculous. But getting into the specifics of Dr. David Kelly's clear murder, let's go over that.
Well, absolutely. Now, on Saturday, 19th of July, David was murdered on the 17th. On Saturday, the 19th, within 48 hours of the murder, I was contacted by a British intelligence officer who Toby had been murdered. That didn't take me by surprise. I was suspicious of the suicide theory from the word go. Now, that source told me he'd done some digging and discovered that he didn't name names, but he discovered that it had been known about in Whitehall prior to the 17th of July that David Kelly was going to be taken down. Now, normally with a suicide, Alex, you appreciate we don't like people knowing in advance. If people know in advance of the death, that normally points away from suicide.
Yes.
Exactly. Now, a lot of work has been done since the murder, and there's been particularly a great deal of medical research. Now, it's absolutely clear that David was murdered. The suicide theory just doesn't hold water at all. The official version of events is that he took some coproximol tablets. Now, coproximol is available in England only by prescription. There is a problem with that because there is no evidence that David Kelly was ever prescribed coproximol. Now, coproximol, I think, is available in the United States. It's a combination of dextropropoxyphene and paracetamol in a ratio of 1 to 10. It's not a very powerful painkiller, and the level of clarproximol in the bloodstream, according to the official toxicology report, was about one-third, i.e. not enough to kill him. Now, 29 tablets were allegedly missing, or were missing, from a packet of clarproximol found by the body. The problem is that there is only one-fifth of a tablet in the stomach, and there's no evidence of substantial vomiting. There is a little bit of vomit found on the body, but not much, and there's no analysis done of the material. The stomach contents do not support the suggestion that he ingested 29 clarproximol tablets. Interestingly, the initial media reports, and when we look at staged suicides or political assassinations, I find it very useful to concentrate on the early media reports, because if there is a cover-up, usually the cover-up kicks in after 12, 24, 36 hours. The first media reports are very often the most accurate, particularly if they're coming from local news organizations. And the early media reports made no mention of a bottle of water. The theory is, Alex, that he took these clarproximol tablets, having set out on a walk in the course of which he was going to commit suicide, and took with him a bottle of water to swallow the tablets. Problem, no mention in early media reports of any bottle of water. That detail was only added in after a group of concerned people in England, professionals called the Kelly Group, had made the point, and it was already out into the open. Now, the suicide version of it can't be right. He was found with one wrist slashed, and the ulnar artery, which is the artery near...
Tell you what, we've got a break. We're going to come back and go over the circumstantial evidence, and then your sources inside intelligence that say, hey, we got the word, he was about to be killed, and then who killed him? We'll talk about that, too. All right, this is a quick segment. We've got a longer segment coming up. Plenty of time to go over this evidence with our guest, and our guest would like to take calls, so... later in the interview, if you'd like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number to join us is 1-800-259-9231, 1-800-259-9231. We're talking to Michael Shrimpton, and he's a national security barrister in England. He has given testimony and advice to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence for the U.S. Senate. And he's obviously very knowledgeable about intelligence and the activities of intelligence agencies. He has a lot of sources in MI5 and MI6. You just heard him talk about one source inside British intelligence that said they got word that Kelly was about to be killed by the government a week or so before he actually died. I want to go back into that in more detail coming up here in a few minutes. But Mr. Shrimpton was then going over... The material evidence of the murder, and you'd gotten to the point of the slitting of the wrist.
Yeah, he clearly didn't slit his own wrist. The idea that he exsanguinated, that he died from hemorrhaging, he bled out from a cut to one wrist only, to the ulnar artery, is just a nonsense, Alex. Firstly, the artery that was cut was the ulnar artery, which is more difficult to reach. It's on the little finger side of the hand. It's deeper than the radial artery. Why go for an artery deep in the wrist when you can slit an artery much closer to the surface of the skin? That's the first problem. Second problem, he, according to the autopsy report, he severed or transected the artery. But once you transect an artery, we have something called vasoconstriction. The artery retracts, and that promotes clotting. It's very difficult to bleed out if you sever one artery only.
And I would second that with David Halpin, a doctor, trauma and orthopedic surgeon, as well as Stephen Frost, specialist in diagnostics. I mean, there's a whole bunch of top-level doctors saying this is a complete fraud.
Exactly. One doctor went around promoting the official version of events and attacked these doctors in the Guardian newspaper in England and talked about slashing wrists. Well, David Kelly, on the official version of events, didn't slash his wrists plural. He slashed one wrist only. It's highly unusual. Firstly, wrist slashing is not an effective method of committing suicide. One of the reasons people do it in a bath of hot water
that keeps
is that they need to keep the temperature high. Yeah. If you're out in the open, if you're not keeping the temperature high, the arteries will not stay dilated. It is very difficult indeed to bleed out in the open, even if you slip both wrists. only, much less blood loss, and we have conflicting accounts of the amount of blood found by the body. The most reliable eyewitnesses, in my judgment, are probably the paramedics who found him, and they talk about comparatively little blood loss. There is no solid evidence that a lot of blood had left the body. There were no adequate measurements of the amount of blood left in the major vessels, in the heart, and so on.
Now, talking to you earlier today, it's pretty clear that they drug him up, then as he's dying, slit his wrist to create this scene. From your sources inside the intelligence community, what really happened to Dr. David Kelly?
Well, in my judgment, based on conversations with sources and with medical experts, and a great deal of work has been done over this since the murder, he was probably murdered by a combination of an injection, not through tablets, but an intravenous injection of dextropropoxifene and paracetamol, the constituents of coproximol, and a muscle relaxant called succinyl choline. Now, succinyl choline is a favorite method of assassinating people. It's used by intelligence agencies, particularly the French DGSE. Succinyl choline, although it's used therapeutically for treating facilitating intubation and so on, can be lethal, and in combination with the constituents of coproximol, 30 milligrams would probably have been a lethal dose. The problem for someone investigating an assassination by succinyl choline is that it metabolizes even after death, and you only pick up the metabolites. In other words, it's one of those drugs that leaves no trace, unless you have a very expert pathologist who really knows what he or she is doing.
Yeah, all you can find is what it metabolizes into. You cannot find the original chemical.
Exactly. So you have to look for the enzymes it metabolizes into. You won't find any trace of the original drug.
Well, it's like with AIDS. You look for the antibodies because you can't find the virus.
Well, effectively, yeah. And it's fairly clear that the slash to the wrist was done to disguise the puncture wound. There's no puncture wound, but of course the slash to the wrist would have disguised it. Now the palmar face, or the palmar face of the wrist, effectively the inside face of the wrist, is a very popular method. Anesthesiologists would use it to inject. It's quite realistic to suppose that David Kelly was injected in the wrist. With the muscle relaxant and the dextropropoxifene and the...
Tell you what, we've got a break again. We'll come back and get into your sources and take some calls.
It's Alex Jones, only on the GCN Radio Network.
Folks, this is very, very important. Because Tony Blair is a minion of the globalists. He's the tool who's trying to destroy British national sovereignty, to bring the British people under the dominance of the unelected, unaccountable European Union, whether they like it or not. He's been promised the EU headship under a new expanded, empowered EU if he can get Britain into it. And he lied about the weapons of mass destruction. It's clear that if Tony Blair was to have been exposed, that would certainly hurt those in Europe that want to get rid of British sovereignty. And talking to Michael Shrimpton, our guest, our intelligence expert, who has his sources over there in England, talking to you earlier before the show, you talked about your sources, the evidence you have, that it looks like that it was elements of British intelligence or of the government using French intelligence to go and do their dirty work, which, by the way, is a standard operation. If intelligence agencies are getting rid of some of their own people, they will generally use a sister agency in a sister country. I know this is very delicate, Michael, but can you go over what you talked to me off air about?
Yes, Alex. Firstly, I should make it clear, I have absolutely no indication that anybody in either of the British intelligence agencies, MI5, the Security Service, or MI6, the Secret Intelligence Service, being involved. On the contrary, my sources are telling me that both services are extremely unhappy. Now, the indications are, and you understand I'm being cautious on air, but there are indications pointing towards an involvement by the French External Intelligence Agency, the DGSE, or Direction Générale de la Sécurité Extérieure.
But obviously they've got a liaison within the government, the British government. They've got to have someone authorizing this? Or are you saying it's just a rogue element wanting to get rid of somebody who can mess up the EU?
No, I've got to be obviously careful on air, but the indications are that the tasking for the assassination came from within the UK, but I can't name any individual official or minister. The tasking was generated in the UK, went to Paris, was then okayed in Paris, and on the information available to me, the operational agency for the assassination was DGSE. Now, there are also indications, and I'm, again, obviously, Alex, you appreciate I'm expressing myself with caution here, there are indications that DGSE, in order to false flag the assassination should their team be discovered, used Iraqi intelligence assets from the Iraqi Mukhabarat agency that were available in Damascus after the fall of Baghdad. And I have one source suggesting that an Iraqi team, that's to say an ex-Mukhabarat team recruited in Damascus with the assistance of the Syrian intelligence operation, also the Mukhabarat, were flown into Corsica in the 7 days prior to the assassination of David Kelly. Now, the standard French practice when they carry out assassinations is to take their own team out, and I am very doubtful that any of the people involved directly in the assassination of David Kelly are still alive. It would be highly unusual for French to permit anyone involved in the assassination for them to survive. I mean,
we've seen this in the past. You've had the big controversy that BBC's reported on about the British intelligence using Al-Qaeda individuals to try to kill Muammar Gaddafi. I mean, this is a classic deal. Of course, the Iraqis were allies during the 80s, and so a lot of these guys were trained in the U.S., trained in England, trained in France, and then bringing these assets back in.
That was a mess. we could spend another hour on that, Alex. Whoever authorized that operation did not know what they were doing. That was just a total shambles.
Wouldn't these Iraqis know that they were doing this hit, that they were going to be in deep trouble afterwards, or were they told you don't have a choice?
No, not necessarily. They may not have worked for French intelligence before. If you were offered a job by French intelligence, I would turn it down. In fact, I'd advise anybody approached by French intelligence to do a hit, I would strongly advise them to turn it down or increase their life insurance. They were probably, assuming it was Iraqis, and I can't be positive. There are indications pointing towards an Iraqi involvement. I can't be positive about DGSE. I have a range of sources, as you've said, and those sources point to Paris, and they point towards DGSE.
Now, DGSE is the equivalent of an MI6. It's outward. DGSU is internal.
It's the DST, Direction du Surveillance de la Territoire, which is the internal agency. And the DST are internal. DGSE are external. Let's just put it this way, Alex. The operation has all the hallmarks of DGSE, and British intelligence on my sources are furious. They're not happy at all, because David, after all, was a British intelligence asset.
Well, by the way, my webmaster, Paul Watson, has talked to a major British news reporter who has talked directly to British intelligence, and they said months ago, I'm talking 6 months ago, the same thing that you just said here.
Well, that is interesting, because that would be almost certainly a different source to mine. It might be. We're talking to the same people. One of the problems in the intelligence world is loopback. Something you think is independent confirmation may turn out to be.
No, I understand. But, clearly from the circumstantial, from the material evidence, you've got murder, you've got a cover-up, you've got a spin, you've got a motive.
Absolutely.
You've got him telling the U.S. doctor, his colleague, if I don't shut up, I'm going to be found dead in the woods, they're going to kill me. I mean, this is all public now. We have him saying they're going to kill me and put me in the woods. You said that you talked to intelligence people who said, yeah, they knew that Kelly was about to get it before he even died. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, the source that spoke to me on 19th July, after the assassination, because, you see, this source was a friend of David Kelly's, and said that David was a friend of a friend. And this source obviously is not very happy. He didn't take him 5 minutes to work out that this was murder, not suicide. He then made inquiries, and he established from other sources that the murder was known about in advance, i.e. the death of David Kelly was known about within a section of Whitehall prior to the 17th of July. And he was very unhappy. onto a radio show and broadcast it around the world.
Well, you have an impeccable record, and you've been involved in a lot of high-profile cases. You testified before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence for our Senate here, and you write for major intelligence journals, and you've certainly impressed me, Mr. Shrimpton, because I study this stuff continually, and you're just a massively knowledgeable, more knowledgeable in many areas than I am.
I should correct. I didn't testify for the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. The briefing I gave was a closed briefing.
Well,
to staff.
That's what I meant.
Okay, so Senator, any senators on the committee? I have, in fact, I had the privilege of meeting Senator Graham when he was chairman, just briefly. Senator Graham, I don't even recall the meeting. We met very briefly when I happened to be in Congress on another matter. Very nice, ma'am.
Well, just to be clear, sir, I mean, I know when you guys testify, it's always public. Here, most of what they do, obviously, you know, is behind doors. That's
exactly
what I mean.
Yeah, this was with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. I was invited into their operation. They're very nice people. And this was a confidential briefing on a case in which I'd been involved, which obviously I can't discuss on the air as a courtesy to the guys and girls I briefed in. Very, very nice people.
Absolutely. Now, I was just going over some of your bio for folks. Now, as we sit here looking at this, for those who don't understand why a element inside England would want to use someone outside England who would then eat... Who would then use another membrane between them and the hitmen? That's just standard operating procedure. But why would the French be happy to go along with getting rid of Kelly?
Well, it would depend on the French assessment of whether or not the government would be at risk. The French would definitely want Tony Blair's government to remain in office. They would be very concerned indeed at any suggestion that might risk the government. That is a very strong geopolitical motive for the French retaining their ally. Don't forget that the Blair government is a close ally of President Chirac. There have been a series of private meetings between Prime Minister Blair and President Chirac since the
assassination. And they're pushing the euro, so they believe that if Blair's in danger, the euro's in danger.
Well, exactly. Tony Blair is the most high-profile politician in the UK committed to destroying the national currency. And the French very much want Blair to remain in office for geopolitical reasons. And we've just had a very unusual summit between Blair, Chirac, and the German Chancellor Schroeder. I have to be very cautious. I'm not naming Tony Blair as the person who generated the tasking for the assassination. Indeed, I am quite comfortable that it wasn't Tony Blair who put the tasking into Paris. Now, question marks, what did he know and when did he know it? But there I can't be so confident.
Well, obviously, Tony Blair is a puppet. I mean, he's not running the entire mechanism of the government. So.
Well, he's a puppet prime minister anyway. He's committed to the European Union. I mean, he takes his orders, like anyone who says we should be in the European Union, you take your orders from Brussels, because that's what government from Brussels involves.
Exactly.
That's the constitutional position. European community law is supreme, according to the European Union, and it takes precedence over British law. And,
yeah, your Magna Carta's gone if that sucker passes.
It's a dead duck these days, Alex. But that's a broader issue. You're right, incidentally, on the false flagging. I mean, I'm often called upon, formally or informally, usually informally, to deconstruct assassinations, to look at a particular assassination and try and work out what's happened. And basically, in counterintelligence work, we would normally recognize eight methods of trying to disguise an assassination. First method is you would try and blame it on your political opponents. That was done in Sweden recently with the assassination of Anna Lindh, the very nice Swedish foreign minister. An attempt was made to blame that on opponents of Sweden joining the euro. You can blame it on a terrorist organization. That was done particularly with the IRA in the attempted assassination of Margaret Thatcher. Assassination of the war hero Éire Ní, a Conservative MP, was blamed on the Irish National Liberation Army. The terrorist organization might carry out the assassination, but in almost every case, the terrorist organization is working for a government. Third method of disguising assassinations, Alex, in my experience, is to false flag them, where it's blamed on another agency. Now, there are elements of false flagging in the Kelly assassination, because had the team which carried out the assassination been discovered, clearly it could have been false flagged via Baghdad, and we'd have had three Iraqis in Oxfordshire, if assuming it was Iraqis for the sake of argument, and obviously blame would then go to Baghdad and Paris would be off the hook. The Iranians tried that quite successfully with the attempted assassination of the Pope back in the early 1980s. Then you have the lone gunman theory. Now, you guys are very familiar with that because you'll recall that somebody tried to blame Lee Harvey Oswald for the assassination of President John Kennedy, an amusing suggestion to those of us who know a little bit more about that assassination than is in the public domain. We've had a lone gunman, a classic example of a lone gunman assassination theory in Europe with the assassination of the Dutch politician Pim Fortuyn, which was blamed on a lone gunman. An explanation which doesn't carry much weight with me, since in the photographs of the assassin that I saw, there was what appeared to me to be a very thin wire leading up to an earpiece in his right ear. And normally, Alex, lone gunmen don't run around with radios and earpieces, particularly high-tech ones.
It was the same thing with Yitzhak Rabin.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Netanyahu's giving speeches about somebody ought to get rid of this guy, and then Rabin's security steps back and they blow him away. I mean,
well, there are certainly respected commentators, General Thomas is one, who would say that the Rabin assassination was definitely not down to a lone gunman. You've got illness. Now, this is fairly rare. It's difficult to fake an illness. It was done in the case of a British politician, Hugh Gaitskell, who was opposed to Britain joining the European Economic Community. And he came down with a tropical disease in Moscow in the middle of winter, generally speaking. it was spotted at the time as an assassination, but MI5, although they brought in Portendown, where David Kelly worked, incidentally, Portendown were brought in, but Portendown couldn't work out how the disease which got Hugh Gaitskell, which is lupus disseminato, is a very nasty disease indeed, attacks the organs, very similar to Ebola. How this tropical disease had found its way to Moscow, they couldn't work out what the agent was for getting the lupus into Hugh Gaitskell. We now know it was probably aerosol, but at the time that technology wasn't known about in England. Then you've got accident, and there are a couple of interesting political assassinations in Zimbabwe of road accidents, which I would put a question mark against. It's less common to try and stage accidents, but it's not unknown. A friend of mine was nearly taken out in Argentina a few years ago in what looked to me to be a slightly dubious
accident. What about Princess Diana? She says Prince Charles is going to kill me in a staged automobile accident, and then she dies.
Well, the Diana assassination is certainly probably the classic recent example of trying to make it look like an accident. Yeah.
We've been having all these microbiologists in government weapons programs will be walking down the street at a university, and a van jumps the rail, chases them, runs them over, then backs back over them, drives back over them, and the police just go, an accident, a hit and run.
Well, if you want the truth on that assassination, the best people to talk to are the Israelis, because they had Danny Yatom, a lovely guy, by the way, who was then head of Mossad in 97, who were really nice people. Danny had teams, I think, on the entrance to the Alma Tunnel and on the exit as well. Interesting man, lovely chap.
Tunnels where?
This was the Alma Tunnel where Diana was taken out.
Yes, yeah.
The seventh method of disguising assassinations, in my experience, is to try and use a naturally occurring poison. A favorite of intelligence agencies is saxitoxin, which occurs in shellfish. So it's possible, providing you can get some shellfish into the stomach of the victim, a saxitoxin assassination, providing you successfully disguise the puncture wound, or you find a method of getting the poison into the body. You can get away with that if you're lucky. And then the final method is the one tried in the case of David Kelly, that you try and make the murder look like suicide. But it's very difficult. In this case, the attempt to slash the wrist was pointless because he was already dead and there's not enough blood. None of the witnesses, in my judgment, reports enough blood consistent with him bleeding out. And the medical experts that we've talked to and that have been insisting on this, the medical experts generally reckon that you'd be looking for 5 pints, that's English pints, of blood. There's nothing I've seen that persuades me that more than a pint was lost, and that's about consistent with what you'd expect from transecting one ulnar artery, completely transecting it. It then retracts, clots, and you get surprisingly little bleeding from cutting your ulnar artery.
Well, sir, can we keep you a little bit in the next hour? Because I want to come back and go to Pat and Jim and Lenny and others that have been patiently holding.
I'd be delighted to talk to you. I didn't realize. I'm sorry. I've been talking on, and I've been keeping people on the phone. I apologize to them, and I look forward to talking to them.
This is important information because this shows the type of things that are going on in our world and how the media tries to spin this. But why do you think the media have been so willing to go along with the official government story that it's a suicide?
Well, the political consequences. The mainstream media in the UK are largely committed to UK membership of the European Union. And my guess is that most of the newspapers in the UK would be worried about the political consequences of going public with any story suggesting David Kelly was assassinated. And then you've got technical competence. There aren't that many good investigative journalists in the UK. And it's not that difficult to get the mainstream media to buy an official version of events.
Yeah, it's easy. Just, you know, the Fed says this, just write it and go drink a beer. We'll be back.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, folks. We're back live here. And we're about to go to your calls. Everybody that's been holding patiently for our guest. Going back to our guest, Michael Shrimpton, national security lawyer, barrister in England. Michael?
Yeah.
Continuing with what we were discussing and just briefly recapping, you have a source who, in intelligence, talked to his other sources, and it was widely known in intelligence that there was an order to get rid of Kelly even before he died.
My source learned after the assassination that others in Whitehall were aware of the assassination in advance, yes. And that source had spoken to, obviously he was a friend of David Kelly's, knew him well, had worked with him, and clearly once his friend was found dead in a wood, made investigations, and when he made investigations, he discovered that this assassination was known about in advance. Yes.
And he told, and this is in the Associated Press, BBC, you name it, he told an American doctor who was on the team with him in Iraq, he said, if I don't shut up about this, I'm going to end up dead in the woods.
Yeah, there was also an interesting conversation with David Brusher, who was formerly British ambassador in Prague in the Czech Republic, along similar lines. And David Brusher, I think, was a witness, in fact, to that inquiry. David Kelly worked, I never had the privilege of meeting him. I'd love to have met him. My friend certainly worked with him and knew him. David worked very closely with the United States intelligence and worked very closely with Sergeant Mike Peterson in particular, but I get the impression he was very highly thought of in the U.S. intelligence community as well.
Was this done by the pro-EU crowd, the globalists I would call them, to put out a chilling effect into everybody in intelligence to keep your mouth shut?
Broadly speaking, yes. Now, motive is another question altogether. It's tolerably clear, one can't be certain, tolerably clear that he was taken out in order to prevent him talking. Now, what is unclear is whether he was taken out because there was concern he was about to acquire intelligence that might be highly damaging, or taken out because he had acquired it and was about to talk to the media. We know there was concern about the extent of his media contacts, and we know
he was also a microbiologist.
Correct.
And there's been a whole bunch of those dying around the world. Let's take a call. Patton, Indiana. Thanks for holding. You're on the air with our guest. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, this is a little off the subject, but it has to do with.
Ma'am, you don't have your radio on, do you?
Yeah.
Or a speakerphone or something, because I'm not going to be able to talk to you if you don't turn it off.
He did.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's on a couple subjects. One in early.
I'm going to have to go ahead and put her on hold. I'm sorry, ma'am, but something's wrong with your phone or you got your radio on. Let's try to bring her back up one more time, and I'm going to let her go. Pat,
hello,
go ahead.
Yeah. This is on a couple of subjects. I don't know what's wrong because we turned our radio off.
Okay, it's all right. Go ahead.
Okay. This is on a couple of subjects, one from Earlham College and one from a town hall meeting I had with Mike Pence on Friday.
Ma'am, is this concerning our guest?
No.
Okay, because you told us that you wanted to talk to our guest. I'm going to have to put you on hold.
Nice to talk to you anyway, Pat.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. You know, we're about to break and start the next hour, and then we'll sort out what's going on with the calls, and we'll get to them. I know there's a whole bunch of calls here for you. We'll try to sort them out and find out what's going on as we talk to our guest, Michael Shrimpton, and national intelligence barrister in England. I bet you see all kinds of just amazing stuff in your job.
I do, yes. not all that I can talk about on the air. And I meet some very interesting people. And I had a very, very interesting visit to Israel in the middle of last year, looking at the new security fence being built.
All right. Well, I hear the music, so that means we've got to go ahead and break. And when we get back and start the third hour, we'll go straight to your calls, folks. If you want to talk to our guest, it's 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. Infowars.com.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, my friends, now into the third hour, talking to Michael Shrimpton, national security barrister in England, with his intelligence sources concerning the murder of Dr. David Kelly. And British people are very, very suspicious, as are many other folks around the world, and more and more is coming out. Let's go ahead and go to Jim in Illinois. Jim, thanks for holding. You're on the air with our guests. Go ahead.
I have two quick questions. Mrs. Shrimpton, what is David Kelly's wife saying about his murder?
Janice Kelly, hi Jim, Janice Kelly accepts that it was suicide. At least that's her official position.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My next question, why didn't the British or the American or the Israeli intelligence assassinate Saddam Hussein before the war?
Well, that's a big question, probably better directed to intelligence officials. Assassination is a very... I mean, I'm opposed to assassinations in principle, one of the reasons why I'm outraged by David Kelly's assassination. Assassination is a double-edged sword, and I think had we gone in and taken out Saddam Hussein, that would have rebounded on both Britain and America very quickly. So I think the call not to assassinate him was probably well made. It's also more difficult to assassinate politicians like Saddam Hussein than first appears. You remember the CIA's farcical efforts to try and get rid of Fidel Castro.
Right.
They had to go for several years, and they didn't get anywhere close to assassinating him with exploding cigars and what have you. I would say the call not to take Saddam Hussein out was right. The danger with assassinating somebody like Saddam Hussein, you build up inside Iraq popular support for his regime.
Yeah, you turn him into a martyr, and also it'll cause a revolution even before you get there, and then you won't control kind of the way the balls break. Thanks for the call. That's a really good question. Anything else, Jim?
No, thank you.
Great to talk to you, Jim.
I've got a question. Where is this
state
going?
Illinois, been there.
I've got a question for you, Michael. Where is all this going? As more and more doctors and people come forward, and as you come forward and say it's clear that he was murdered, I mean, where does all this go for Tony Blair?
Well, there are indications that he may be preparing to resign. He's denied officially over the weekend that he's planning to resign, which is an indication that he is. Never believe anything until it's officially denied. A number of key advisors have bailed out. Alastair Campbell, another key advisor, Philip Gould, has just been offered a peerage, which is a form of retirement we have in England that you don't have in the United
Michael
States.
Michael Meacher, months ago.
Michael Meacher, yes. There are now calls. Michael Meacher has issued a call. He's a former government, nice chap, a former government minister. Michael has issued a call over the last weekend calling on him to go. There are indications that he is on his way out, but, you know, it's up to him. Or up to his party.
Well, that would certainly be good. I mean, have you ever had a prime minister this bad?
Well, that's a political question. The answer is probably, but I can't remember when. It's a close toss-up between Tony Blair, John Major, and Lord North, who lost the American colonies. But from your point of view, Lord North is probably quite good to have in Downing Street.
That's funny.
Neville Chamberlain, I think that without being disrespectful to my Prime Minister on the air, I think it's a close call between Tony Blair and Neville Chamberlain. You could have 10 different politicians and economists and military strategists sit around a table and come up with 10 different answers as to whether Neville Chamberlain surrendered more of Europe than Tony Blair, and whether Tony Blair surrendered more to France and Germany than Neville Chamberlain did. It's a close-run thing.
Well, I think it's clearly Tony Blair if he gets what he wants.
Yeah, I had I have to say, having met Tony Blair, he's quite a pleasant, personable individual. He's not a monster when you meet him.
Well, they said that about Adolf Hitler, too. You know, we've got a break. We'll come right back, and we'll go to Lenny Bloom, who's been on this story, and we'll also talk to David in Texas and a few other callers for our guests, and we'll get to Bob and Ron and others and a bunch of other key news items. Stay with us.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Just an absolutely amazing and riveting interview of the last hour and 8 minutes with our guest, a national security barrister, a lawyer, who has, consulted with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence here in the U.S. and given speeches and consulted around the world and writes for major terrorism journals, going over, well, just a lot of interesting facts for us. Like, usually, if you've got some type of terrorist assassination, terrorist killing people, there's usually a government behind them using them as a go-between. Oh, we've discovered that here in our research, too, and going over the evidence of how Dr. David Kelly was killed, and the elements inside governments that did it, and why. Let's take a few calls. We'll go to David and Ian and a few others here in a few minutes. But right now, let's go to Lenny Bloom, who's been a guest on this show before and has the website cloakanddagger.com. I know last week they got some rumblings of this story and put it out. And Lenny, what's on your mind?
Well, welcome. Thanks for having me back. Alex, you're doing a tremendous yeoman service job. You know, the pilots who fly these assassination teams around the world don't have a public responsibility to tell the media, tell the truth, or tell people. But the media has a core responsibility. You know, these things, there's so many people involved that I've known and been a part of as a spy pilot over the years. This thing with Dr. Kelly is something that's interesting. Ever since the Duke of Edinburgh said he wanted to become a deadly virus and come back and be reincarnated, we have kept a biochemical doctor's death list for good reason. The Duke doesn't want to be suspected or blamed for his actions. It's really interesting and clear what's going on here. It's right in front of everybody's nose.
Okay, Lenny, do you have any questions or comments for our guest?
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for coming out. I think it's great that you're starting to dig into the whole thing. I think Kelly was number 50 on the death list, that's wonderful.
Lenny?
Yeah.
Let me ask our guest that. Are you familiar, sir, that there's been all over the Western world, Australia, Russia, Western Europe, England, the U.S., top bioweapons scientists being murdered, and that Kelly just so happened to be one more on that list?
Well, I'm aware of an unusually high percentage of microbiologists going south, and it's, put it this way, it's attracted my interest. I think David Kelly wasn't taken out as part of a systematic campaign to take out WMD scientists.
I didn't say that. He's part of a death list, though, and
yeah,
there may be different reasons for it.
Hi, Lenny. Good to hear from you. You mentioned you're a spy pilot. What planes are you flying?
Well, I'm rather grounded right now.
What did you used to fly?
I flew everything from F-18s to F-14s to Cessna 172s to Bell 206s, and my student became Air Force One helicopter for 10 years, he's a three-star general.
I wish I could introduce you to a client of mine. He once flew an airplane called the Lockheed U-2A over the Soviet Union with a guy called Gary Powers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for the call, Lenny. I appreciate that, and thanks for all your work.
Yes, great to talk to you, Lenny.
Yeah, let's talk to David in Texas. David, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, sir.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a quick question on the media. I know that you're involved in intelligence, but like in our country, we don't see a lot of programming from Tel Aviv and Palestinian television. And I know they present a very I don't know, ethical code of the fatwa and things of that such. And we don't quite hear a lot of that. And I'm curious.
Okay, I'm trying to understand exactly what you're saying. Boil it down for us.
Well, the promotion of you know, dying for Allah is a shown thing on TV in Tel Aviv, and media doesn't really focus on that here in the United States. I'm wondering what your view is on that, and do you see that in Europe?
Well,
I'll go ahead and listen. Thank you.
Okay, David. Always a pleasure to talk to somebody from whereabouts in Texas are you from?
I believe he's gone.
He's gone. Well, let me answer his question as a courtesy to him. I'm not very impressed with media coverage in the Middle East generally. I do subscribe to a very interesting service called Memory, the Middle East Media Research Institute, and some of the stuff they come up with on what is broadcast on mainstream media in Egypt and Saudi Arabia concerning Israel is just shocking. It's like the 1930s all over again. Very, very disturbing stuff. So I'm not very impressed with mainstream coverage of the Middle East, and that was partly why I went to Israel in June, a little fact-finding tour.
You were there with the IDF on the ground. What did you learn?
Well, I was very impressed with the way the IDF ran checkpoints. I talked to the checkpoint commander in Jenin, for example, very impressed with what I saw, very impressed with the security fence, which is clearly having an impact in those sectors of the West Bank where it's been erected.
I know this. We sure need one of those on the southern border of the U.S. I want one. That thing's beautiful.
Well, I think your southern border is a bit porous, and as we've seen on 9/11, porous borders can present dangers. And,
well, I'm not kidding. I've literally seen photos of that thing, and I start salivating on it.
Yeah,
because just the raping and killing and robbery and Mexican troops and killing federal officers, and our news doesn't even report on it. I mean, it is bedlam on our southern border.
Your southern border is not particularly well protected, with every respect to the guys and girls who are down there protecting it. But they need more resources. But
back to the IDF. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Well, I'm a big fan of the IDF. I was very impressed talking with, you know, from soldiers up to generals. I think the IDF are doing a good job. I think the Israelis know far more about counterterrorism than we do in Britain or in the United States. And my general line with Israel is I think we in the West, the rest of the West, Israel is part of the West, we need to get off the Israelis' back and let them go and do the job. They do know what they're doing.
Well, certainly they know how to build a fence, and I wish we had one of those.
Yeah, the fence is very impressive. It's more than a fence, of course. You've got a ditch, you've got a roadway that allows regular patrolling, easy access to any terrorist incursion, good surveillance, some good high tech stuff there. The security barriers is a very impressive development.
Yeah, let's go ahead now. And who's up next in line here, Stephanie? Ian in Canada, you're on the air with our guest. Go ahead.
Thanks, Alex. I wanted to ask your guest, I wanted to explore the occultic implications of David Kelly's death. And by illustration, I want to refer to a case that he may be familiar with, Air Marshal Sir Peter Horsley. They tried to take him out like Diana with the rigged brakes on his BMW in the mid-80s, just between Amesbury Circle and Stonehenge, about 660 yards. If you can believe it, into his drive west along the motorway. There was that occultic association. And what I'm wondering is, because David Kelly, you reported, probably died on July 17th, which is right in the middle of that high holiday they celebrate at Bohemian Grove, Alex. That was the date that the
I'll
Russian...
Tell you what, let me bring this up to him. I don't know if he's aware of it, but Skull and Bones, admittedly a weird occult organization... Bohemian Grove, I snuck into it. That was on National British Television. The footage I shot a few years ago, it's also aired here. In some of these killings, they do seem to do it in a ritualistic fashion. That was brought up with Princess Diana. Do you want to get into that, or is that true?
No, I didn't see respect to Ian in Canada. I don't know whereabouts in Canada you are, but it's a great country. I don't see any occult relationship with the Kelly assassination at all. I'm not familiar with. I don't know Sir Horsley, and I'm not familiar with that. Was that an attempted assassination?
He claims that he was being used to take somebody else out, but they rigged his BMW, and I believe he was the target.
See, But see, here's the problem. We mix all this other stuff in that we can't prove, Ian. Then when the news goes and listens to this interview, it's, you know, discussions of you know, things we can't prove. That's the problem.
Well, Alex, if the guest wants to explore this, the book that Sir Peter wrote is Voices from Another Room, and he'd find it in the UK.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
I know plenty of air marshals. I'm sure I can find an air marshal who knows or knew Sir Peter.
All right. And I guess up next is Wayne. Wayne, where are you calling us from? Okay, Wayne is gone. Let's go ahead and go to Bob in California. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air, Bob.
I'm kind of sorry. I'm not on topic today. I wanted to call you about the Diebold machines that our county is using on for touch-tone voting.
You know what? I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get to you coming up in the next segment.
Good morning, Bob. That's an interesting subject, but not one on which I could give any qualified comment.
Well, we got so many callers here, it's hard to figure out who's calling in on subject. It would be nice if they did call in on subject.
You're a popular guy, Alex, and I can understand having listened to your show, why you've got a lot of feedback.
Oh, well, it's great. A lot of great people out there, and we've obviously got to have you back on because you're a very intelligent, very informative person, because there's not many people that I get on the show who end up knowing more about intelligence matters, because I study it pretty much perpetually, and you've brought out some very important information, and I really want to thank you for coming on the show, Mr. Shrimpton.
Alex, it's been my pleasure and a privilege.
And for those that just joined us, again, Michael Shrimpton, a national intelligence lawyer or barrister in England, and he writes for major intelligence journals and has consulted around the world on intelligence matters, and he was coming on exposing the murder of Dr. David Kelly. Do you think those that were responsible will ever be brought to justice, sir?
I don't think they will. I think those immediately responsible are already dead. My guess is they were taken out within 24, 48 hours of the assassination. I suspect those involved in tasking the assassination will be dealt with informally and will be given valuable guidance, and the public will not get to know about it. And my guess is that the coroner, Nick Gardner, who has jurisdiction to hold an inquest, will not hold an inquest. That means no jury will ever inquire into the reasons for David Kelly dying.
Thank you.